This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, back live for the rest of our program today. At the end of last month, the U.S. Supreme Court released its final rulings of a remarkably consequential term. One of them was the case of West Virginia versus the Environmental Protection Agency. A majority of the justices decided in favor of West Virginia, limiting the EPA's future ability to regulate carbon emissions from existing power plants. In the 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court invoked the major questions doctrine, which basically says anytime an agency does something that might have a large effect on the nation, it has to have the approval of Congress. The ruling raises questions about the future of the Environmental Protection Agency in the fight against climate change and federal agency regulation in general. Joining us now to talk about the Supreme Court's decision is Jennifer Walling, Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. Jen, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Morning, Brian.
Also with us is David Dana. He's the Kirkland and Ellis Professor of Law at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law in Evanston, Illinois. He's also Director of the University's Program on Sustainability and Food and Animal Law. David, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, we originally intended to bring you this conversation a little closer to when the decision came down, but obviously we bumped a number of conversations last week in order to focus on the tragedy in Highland Park. We are talking about it today. We do want to hear from you. If you have a perspective or concerns on our climate fight and what this decision means and where we are going, how quickly we're getting there, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation, 800-222-9455. So, Jen, you lead the Illinois Environmental Council, which is a sort of an umbrella organization of environmental groups. Talk about your reaction when this ruling came down.
This is definitely something that we are disappointed has happened. In terms of what the ruling was, it is not as bad as it could have been, although we are looking at long-term things the U.S. Supreme Court may do that could be extremely problematic, not only to environmental executive action, but with other agencies at the federal level as well. So this definitely removes one of the tools from the toolbox to be able to quickly fight climate change. So we're hopeful that the federal government moves forward on what it can do. And in Illinois, it makes us even more grateful that we passed the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act signed into law last year in 2021. Because we are making those changes within the state and pursuing progress on fighting climate change.
Yeah, and David, maybe you can speak a little bit to what Jen was saying there about this isn't the worst case scenario outcome that some environmental activists had feared could come out of this decision.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it could have been worse. So the Supreme Court a number of years ago with a different composition agreed with the proposition that of some states and activists that carbon dioxide, greenhouse gas emissions, were pollutants under the Clean Air Act, and that basically EPA had to regulate for greenhouse gases. It's conceivable that this opinion could have tried to cut back on that, could have tried to reverse EPA's jurisdiction altogether. So in that sense, it was a relief. I think it was a relief, too, in that the court could have gone even further and said agencies really can't do anything. It's just unconstitutional for them, for Congress to delegate them a lot of authority. And so the court didn't go to the extreme in either way. But I agree with the previous comment that the decision will hamstring EPA and agencies at the federal level in dealing with climate. And also it does open the door to allowing the federal courts to strike down major regulations in the future in a way that adds lots of uncertainty that isn't helpful.
Jen, I think Bill McKibben, the environmental activist, has this line that winning slowly in the fight on climate change, winning slowly is still losing. And do you think we are doing enough? And we can get into the specifics of this decision and what it means, but in a broad way, are we doing enough to try and win this fight?
We're definitely not doing enough. There is definitely not enough progress needed to reach the carbon emissions levels that we need to reach by 2030 to avoid irreversible damage to our entire planet, which is what scientists have said the deadline that we need to meet. So it is really devastating to look at it in that way, that we are not doing enough. But I always like to stay hopeful in terms of what we are going to be able to achieve. And I see a lot of recognition and understanding of climate science, particularly in younger generations, and concern and anxiety over how it's going to impact their future. That gives me hope that we are going to make changes and we are going to address this incredibly serious issue. And I do see a number of companies moving forward on their own to address climate emissions, understanding that these regulations are coming, they are going to impact the United States. We are going to get there, but it is disappointing to have this tool taken out of the toolbox, and definitely disappointing to see our nation's highest court siding with fossil fuel companies and far-right politicians.
So what are Jen, what are climate advocacy organizations doing in response to this decision? And I should say we have to take a break in about a minute and a half here.
Sure. So I think there's a few things that are going to be incredibly important. One, we need to pass there's sort of a Build Back Better climate package, transformational climate and clean energy reconciliation bill we need to do. We need to take bold executive action on climate. There's still tools that are available to us in terms of addressing those issues. And then we're going to need to reform the judicial system. There's vacancies, there's looking at the judicial system overall. This is incredibly problematic how these interests have swayed and dominated this in a way that is going to be catastrophic to the health of our nation.
Okay, we are talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in West Virginia versus the Environmental Protection Agency and what that means for the future of our attempts to mitigate the effects of climate change. This was a 6-3 ruling. We're going to talk a little bit more about the details and how the majority got there, as well as one of the dissenting opinions. We're talking about this with Jen Walling, who's Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council, and David Dana, a professor of law at Northwestern University, also director of the university's program on sustainability and food and animal law. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. How are you feeling about the climate? Are we doing enough? Are you optimistic still? Are you hopeful that we can get on top of this? Or are you losing hope? Or maybe you're one of those increasingly small number of people who thinks that we're just chasing after a lot of nothing. We do want to hear from you. 800-222-9455. More to come on The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision, West Virginia versus Environmental Protection Agency, limiting the ability of the EPA to, in the future, this is actually not something it was doing, it was planned, it was never implemented, but to regulate carbon emissions from existing power plants. We're talking about this with Jennifer Walling, Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council, and David Dana, Professor of Law at Northwestern University. And David, I sort of fancy myself an amateur Supreme Court nerd, so I was curious about this major questions doctrine that was a significant part of the majority opinion. Where can I read more about that in, say, the U.S. Constitution? What constitutes a
you
major
can't read
question?
About it anywhere. So the major questions doctrine is made up by the court, and this is the first opinion in which the Supreme Court actually used that term, major questions. But it's a theory, getting back to some of the previous comments, that I think a lot of business groups, some conservative lower federal court judges have been pushing. So you can't read about it anywhere. It's kind of made up. And the other thing about it is it's still really unclear what it means, because Justice Roberts' opinion doesn't really explain when you see it, when you know a major question and when you don't. He says major questions are only for extraordinary cases, but extraordinary isn't really defined. So we don't know if major question means cases that are kind of different from what an agency usually has done, or cases that are going to have a big economic impact, or cases that just seem, you know, kind of transformational in some cultural way, or really just cases that the court thinks is major. But it does matter a lot, because this major questions doctrine seems to be a kind of get out of prison, or, you know, free card to the court to essentially require the Congress had been extremely specific. And Congress is almost never really extremely specific. And so if you call something a major question, it really sets it up such that the court can easily invalidate the regulation.
Yeah, well, obviously, I was being a little sarcastic there. I mean, it
I
seems like the court does want to know that James Madison thought about certain issues, but maybe not so much on other ones, right?
Yeah, well, one thing that's striking about this opinion is that none of the usual jurisprudential methods that the courts follow, especially the conservative majority, are in evidence at all in the majority opinion. There's no originalism, as you talk about. There's no kind of talking about what was the original understanding of anything. There's really no textualism. The opinion isn't really based on the text very much of the statute. There really isn't much about tradition or judicial history or precedent. This is kind of comes out of the blue. So this really is the court just kind of making it up, maybe driven partly by a view that the agencies are just going out of control and it needs another tool to manage them, maybe driven by a view that constitutionally agencies should be more constrained. But it really isn't based on any of the originalism or textualism rhetoric that we usually see the conservative majority invoking, as they have invoked in other opinions.
Jen, I'm going to maybe go out on a limb here then and say maybe the court, what if they are right on the law, right? The Clean Air Act was not, global warming wasn't as much on the radar really when that was enacted. And if Congress wasn't so paralyzed by a structure that gives more power to empty swaths of land than it does to the mass public, it could pass a new law, clearly authorizing the government to do what it was trying to do here.
Well, I think that there are laws that authorize going after carbon emissions. And specifically, I mean, looking at this case specifically, there are much worse things that could have happened, which we've already reviewed, that they could have undone all environmental regulation and all executive action that isn't specifically delineated by Congress, like the thought that we have agencies, the thought of delegation authority. I think there are justices on the court that have some very extreme positions on delegation of powers to the federal government. They also could have said that we can't regulate carbon emissions, but this ruling specifically was about fuel switching. So it was about the Clean Power Plan, which was going to look at requiring coal plants to close and switching to other energy sources rather than the in the fence line approach, which is basically, the pollution that's coming out of the stack or coming out of the facility, which is usually how we regulate it. So this is, like I said, it's better than it could have been, but it does remove an important item and definitely have concern about where this is going to go in the future. Definitely concerned about the Clean Air Act overall, though that is a tool of Congress, is the Clean Air Act. So definitely have a lot of concern about where we are going with the federal government and what other states might want to do.
Jen, maybe can you just briefly reflect on the role the EPA has had in shaping life as we know it in America today since it was originally created under President Nixon in the 1970s?
Sure, these impacts have been enormous within the country. I mean, we are looking at a country where you had rivers on fire. I think there have been some places of enormous progress because of the different Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Safe Drinking Water Act. All of these have really enormously impacted Americans' lives overall. And there are times when, this is US EPA, you pass these things. EPA delegates a lot of the authority to states. And there have been times where that delegation authority has been taken away because the state hasn't been performing the federal laws as well as they could be. And I think that's a lot of what we might see if we got rid of US EPA. If we did this on a state-by-state basis, it would just be a race to the bottom in terms of certain states and their willingness to protect people that live within their states. They would be looking at these as excess costs, but these changes have really been a benefit to all Americans and our quality of life. And we would go back to where we were. I mean, we look at China and you can't even see in the air some days. And that's not a world I think that Americans want to live in.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Paul is on the line from Urbana. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to reflect on this. What I find is a high irony is that carbon dioxide as a pollutant was actually adjudicated at the Supreme Court, and they said, yeah, the EPA can do that. It seems to me that this reversal is right up there with all of the other reversals the Supreme Court is doing, where it's really raw power and the power of the Koch money and financing the Federalist Society and Trump and getting these three idiots in, ignoring Merrick Garland and the whole. I mean, I'm getting apoplectic here, so I know you are short on time, so I'll hang up and listen on the air.
All right, Paul, we do try to keep it polite here on the 21st show. David, what's your perspective on what Paul had to say?
Yeah, I'm sympathetic to the comment. In a way, it's true that in Mass versus EPA, this case from a number of years ago, the court said that EPA does have the authority under this 1990 statute to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, and in some ways has to do it. And as Paul, I think the commenter suggested, this current court could have, if you brought it back in time, had said, well, no, it doesn't, because the statute isn't clear about that, right? The original statute just says pollutant, and maybe pollutant never contemplated such a major thing as greenhouse gas emissions. So in a way, it is opening up that issue. At the same time, the current opinion didn't go that far. The current opinion seemed to kind of accept that EPA did have jurisdiction here, did seem to accept that you could regulate carbon emissions, at least within the plant site. So it doesn't go that far. It doesn't go that far. But conceptually, at least it does open up the possibility of some very problematic rulings in the future.
Well, Jen, I guess there's two parts here. How does this complicate what the Biden administration might be planning to do in the future? If they are, you know, indeed planning to do, what do you want to see from them going forward?
Well, this definitely gets rid of one of the main tools that was part of the Clean Power Plan, which also we haven't brought forward. You know, even that the court took this case is astonishing, because this was a rule that never went into effect. And, you know, we brought up that major questions doctrine as part of why there was the standing, why there was the ability to move forward with it. The Clean Power Plan never went into effect. It was stricken by the Trump administration, never happened. So we've never had this policy move forward.
And we can pause on that. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. Yeah. I did take a con law class, and I do remember cases and controversy. You have to have actual controversy, mm-hmm. or you were supposed to get a case before the court, right?
Yes, and so this rule never happened, and yet it was brought to the Supreme Court. So it does definitely limit what the Biden administration can do in terms of fuel switching, in terms of requiring states to move off of coal. But there are definitely carbon emission regulations, especially on existing plants, whether coal or natural gas, that can be used to reach the same tool. I think it takes away some of the flexibility that states may have in actually being able to meet some of the carbon emission stuff as well, and in what tools we're left with. So I think that there are items the administration can do. And we've talked Build Back Better, not going to happen as is, but I think there are a number of climate items that are supported by Senator Manchin that we could see move forward. And that investment in clean energy, that investment in efficiency, investment in job training in the clean energy and clean job sector is going to be something very powerful that the federal administration can do to move forward progress on fighting climate change.
Can I jump in a little bit?
Please.
The other thing I'd say is that there's actually an upside in just market forces. So, you know, a lot of the concern behind this case and the states that brought it was the coal industry. But, you know, coal is on decline anyway, because as a cost, in terms of cost, it's just not a very effective fuel, especially given other pollution regulations. So I don't think this is going to stop the kind of decrease in coal. It's just that it'll make it harder to do that quickly. And I think it'll also increase the cost, the regulatory cost of doing something. Because it reduces flexibility, it'll make it harder for states to most efficiently meet their goals. So in some ways, it's really calling for greater inefficiency in regulation.
David, what do you think of Justice Elena Kagan's dissent on the court's opinion? She wrote, in part, the court appoints itself instead of Congress or the expert agency, the decision maker on climate policy. I cannot think of many things more frightening.
Yeah, Justice Kagan's dissent, I think, is spot on. And one of the things that's really, I think, correct about it is that the majority opinion doesn't evince any great understanding about climate change or even about what it means to have an energy transition. They're taking a lot on faith what they're being told by in the briefs that they take stock in. And I think her big point is we're not experts, right? The court isn't an expert in this. This is this incredibly complicated, urgent phenomenon, and the court's acting as if it really understands what it is and that it can kind of second guess and micromanage it. And that in a sense, this is just arrogating a lot of power to the court. And I think she's exactly right about that. I think she was also right, you know, that the statute here actually read just as a text did give EPA a lot of authority. So I think you see in this dissent, as you did in some of the other dissents this term, just a lot of frustration that the court is taking a lot of power onto itself.
Well, on that note, Jen, and we're coming to the end of our time together, but there's been so much attention on the Supreme Court's decision on abortion and as well as guns this year. What is your case to just everyday people about out there about why this is something that they should dedicate brain space to worrying about as well?
I think this is a part of a dangerous trend by the courts. It is extremely extreme. It's very extreme. And like I said, we're looking at far-right politicians who are putting corporate profits ahead of people, ahead of the law, ahead of our health. And I think that it should be very concerning to the American public where we're going in the future with the court. Also, this is an extremely dangerous trend. I mean, this one may not have been, it is awful, not as bad as it could have been. But in looking at, for example, the election cases that the court may take on in the fall, or looking at what some of the Supreme Court justices have said about delegation authority, is really troubling for the future of where executive action is going in our ability to fight climate change and fight it as quickly as possible.
Jen Walling is Executive Director of the Illinois Environmental Council. David Dana is Kirkland & Ellis Professor of Law at the Pritzker Law School at Northwestern University. Jen, David, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone who called in. There were at least one caller we weren't able to get to. I'm sorry, we just ran out of time. Thank you for calling in. Do please call back again. And that is all the time we have for our program today. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. This is the first time we've spoken since the Dobbs decision on abortion from the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll be talking about that, as well as gun safety, gun control legislation in the wake of the mass shooting in Highland Park. Before we go, I want to urge you to visit our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can subscribe to our podcast. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, every other podcast app. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Jose Zepeda and Aiden Choate. Our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.